From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you, and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available on iTunes.
Welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. On today's show, the popular Yelp Holiday Bazaar, the equally popular Indianapolis Symphonic Choir's Festival of Carols, and even some non-holiday topics. And don't forget, we'll have that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do?
All of that and so much more right after the latest news from NPR. Welcome back to The Art of the Matter from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. Today, if spending time with family has made you want to write your memoir, stay tuned to learn about a workshop with great advice. But first, Cathead Press is an independent, nonprofit fine printmaking studio and art space located in Indianapolis's Near East Side neighborhood of Englewood. Cathead focuses on teaching printmaking workshops to artists of all skill levels, but also features gallery space for art exhibitions and monthly First Friday events. Contributor Ben Shine recently sat down with Cathead director Dominic Sinibaldi to talk about what's happening at the studio.
Tell us about Cathead Press and your mission.
So our mission is to provide, you know, the immediate area with a place to make artwork, basically. We're a fully equipped printmaking studio, so people can come in and use the facilities. If they don't know how to do, you know, screen printing or some process, we do offer workshops so people can, you know, learn how to do what they want to do.
How did Cathead Press get started? Who started it?
It was myself and some of my colleagues from graduate school, Michael Hofel, Liz Wurzbicki, and Marna Shopoff. And we all just got together and, you know, I'm a printmaker, so I sort of knew the idea of a community-based print shop. I had seen it in other cities like Chicago. So I just basically came to them and was like, hey, let's start a print shop. And it just sort of snowballed from there. So,
well, why printmaking? Like, why is printmaking so interesting to you?
I think a big part of printmaking is the collaborative aspect. The idea of a print shop is, you know, it's a shared space. So you always have different people using the facility with yourself and stuff like that. So it really is this sort of collaboration with other artists, and I think that's the most appealing thing to me.
What's it like for first-time visitors? Printmaking is something that's kind of hard to learn, though. So what's it like for a first-time?
So there's always a little bit of trepidation, I think, from people. You know, they see these big machines and all these, like, inks and everything. So I think there is, you know, a little bit of fear. but we always try to sort of alleviate that fear by showing them, you know, really simple processes to begin with, and then showing them, you know, how you can take those basic tool sets and sort of develop them to, you know, really make the work that you want to make.
So what kind of work can people make there? I mean, you guys do everything from, what, lino cut, complicated printmaking to silk screening t-shirts even?
Yeah, basically, yeah, we're mostly set up for screen printing. So the screen printing aspect of the shop is really large. And we're pretty much set up to do, you know, a whole range of different screen printing processes. So multiple layer, you know, just printing on paper with ink. And we do have setups for, you know, if people want to print on shirts and fabric and canvas and stuff like that. But we do have some litho presses as well as a really nice etching press so people can do lino cut, wood cut, you know, monotype, stuff like that.
But you guys can handle somebody who's a beginner as well as to a more advanced
printmaker. Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
So you guys are over on the east side in a really sort of what I would call an area with a lot of energy right now. Can you tell us about being over?
Yeah.
What's your neighborhood called? Englewood?
Englewood. Yeah, it's the Englewood neighborhood. And we're sort of in the heart of one of the great places. So corner of Washington and Rural Street. We're actually on Washington, right next to the Carnegie Library that's there. Mm-hmm. And we love the area. You know, it's a really vibrant area. There's a lot of people that live there. I personally live on the east side. I'm just on Parker right off of 10th Street. So it's an area I've been going to ever since I moved to Indy, you know, back in 2011. And I just really fell in love with it. And, you know, I just think there's a lot of cool things happening over there.
Yeah, it is really awesome over there. So you guys have events that happen each month. Can you tell us about a few of them?
Yeah, so we always run a screen printing workshop once a month. The next one is on the 22nd of October, and that's something we run every month. It's a day-long workshop, and people really kind of get their, you know, their hands in it, and we show them a lot of processes for that workshop.
And does that focus on screen printing?
Yes, it does. Yeah, it's our screen printing workshop.
And you do one that I think that has beer involved with it?
Yeah, we always do what we call a drink and ink, and that's always like a 21 and up. It's usually at night, and we get some like local beers, and, you know, people just kind of hang out. We always have, you know, whether it's making buttons or making zines, so it's
awesome.
Always something kind of fun and silly, and people just kind of hang out.
You also have one of my favorite local artists showing coming up this month, too, Carlos Cesares. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, so he's doing a show, and that's called Noche de Torah, de Terror, I'm sorry. And that's basically like his sort of like horror art. He does a lot of sort of horror-based imageries. And so that's going to be his show. He's curating it. It's going to be a lot of his work, and I think his wife Nevada's work as well.
So, Dominic, thanks for coming. And before we wrap up, what would you tell someone who has never done printmaking but always wanted to try?
Just don't be afraid to try, and, you know, just approach it with excitement and a positive attitude, and you can learn anything, basically.
That's really great. Thanks for coming by today.
Thank you so much.
Contributor Ben Schein with Dominic Senabaldi from Cathead Press. You can find out more about the art studio at catheadpress.com. The Indianapolis Symphonic Choir's annual performances of Festival of Carols often sell out, so the organization is once again featuring five chances for you to hear their concerts, whose tickets are on sale now. As a special treat, Tony Award winner Alice Ripley will join the 2017 lineup at all five performances. I invited Executive Director Michael Petrie in to learn about these concerts.
What is it about the holidays and choirs that are, it's synonymous?
Isn't that the truth?
What is
I think
that?
You've hit something right on the head. Something about the magic of the holidays and the human voice. There's nothing else like it, is there? Now, I'm not necessarily a singer, and you don't have to be a singer to enjoy the music, the choral music of the holidays, right? This is it's an art form that really transcends generations. And, you know, I think choral music especially speaks to young people. I think people who are just in elementary school, for example, they're going to recognize some of the tunes.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to maybe sing along a little bit, and they'll probably be tapping their feet. At the same time, I think choral music, holiday choral music especially, is really going to speak to some of our older generations, too. So maybe what I'm saying is a lot of the music
something
on Festival of Carols is perfect for everybody.
Yeah, there's definitely some nostalgia there. And you know what? I think you've hit something important with kids who spend so much time online or watching a backlit screen where they may be exposed to a lot of people at the same time. And yeah, maybe they're watching music on YouTube, but there's something about live music that is especially potent and super important to get new generations introduced to.
There's nothing like going to a concert, is there? There's no substitute like
it.
I love listening to music, certainly online or a CD or your podcast, but to go to the concert hall, to get perhaps dressed up and put your holiday attire on, whether you're a kid or not a kid. Kids from 9 to 1, 8, 2, 1 to 2, can we say
yeah,
that?
Yeah, sure.
9 to 1 to 2, yeah, okay. It could be that we go to the concert and want something special. We want to escape to memories of yesteryear, of holidays with our family. And I think that's what we get when we go to the holidays. You know, some of the music that we'll be performing is very familiar. Joy to the World, O Come All Ye Faithful, music that many of us grew up with and certainly could sing along with. But we also include on Festival of Carols new music.
Yeah.
Music that we've never heard of. And so part of the Symphonic Choir's Festival of Carols is including new memories, creating new memories with young and old alike.
And, you know, for people who think, oh, Indianapolis Symphonic Choir, that's all classical.
Right.
But this is not the classical music isn't accessible, but this is very accessible music, including the new music.
That's right. You will hear some classical music, certainly, on the Symphonic Choir's Festival of Carols. But at the same time, it's, I have to tell you, a song from Anastasia is going to be on the concert. And that's a favorite, right? It's a newer piece for younger generations at the same time. We have a special guest coming, Alice Ripley. She has a Tony Award. This is a big deal for the Symphonic Choir, and certainly for the community, I think. She will be familiar to anybody who's followed Broadway over the past 10 or 15 years or so. Certainly an exciting moment for us. But this is what I find to be interesting. She has a local Indiana connection, come to find out.
Oh, really? What's that?
The Red Barn Theater, just up the road.
Yeah.
Not too far away, what, about 45 minutes or so north of here in Frankfurt. That was her first gig, if you will, after graduating from college.
Aww.
So a little bit of a homecoming of
all
sorts.
All roads lead back to Indiana.
That's right,
eventually.
The crossroads of America.
Sometimes
right
it just takes a long time to get there.
That's right.
And you're doing the concert. It's kind of a road show again. You're going multiple places.
That's right. So five performances of Festival of Carols this coming December. And the opening weekend is at the Schrott Center on the Butler University campus. This is the first for us, actually, to perform at the beautiful Schrott.
I can't wait to hear that because the acoustics are amazing for instrumental music. I've not heard choral music
for
there yet.
For the vocal music. It's really stunning. You know, just a little tidbit for our listeners here. Interestingly, the stage, the size of the stage at the Schrott is just about the same size as the stage at Clues Hall right next door. So a lot of musical real estate on that stage that... Don't worry, we'll fill it all up with the Symphonic Choir and the Chamber Orchestra. After the Schrott, you're right, we do go up north to the Palladium for four performances later on in the month.
And for people who are saying, wait a minute, you're talking about Festival of Carols, how about Messiah?
Oh, it's evergreen, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's right. With then December just around the corner here, we have two performances of Messiah this year. And an angle. We've all heard Messiah, or at least many of us heard Messiah many times before. This is what's interesting, I think, about Messiah this year. It's not the entire 160 voices of the Symphonic Choir. It'll be a smaller complement of about 55 to 60 voices. So you'll get to hear this evergreen masterwork in a new light this December.
And with kind of a period size ensemble.
That's right, period size vocal ensemble and a slightly more period size orchestra ensemble as well.
The Indianapolis Symphonic Choir's Michael Petrie. The singers welcome the holidays this year with their Festival of Carols at the Schrott Center for the Arts at Butler University and at the Palladium. Concerts are December 3rd, 15th, 16th, and 17th. For times and tickets, visit indychoir.org. You're tuned to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Coming up, the Yelp Holiday Bazaar could help you knock out all of your shopping in one day. But first, Eat Drink Indie's Jolene Ketzenberger talks with Chris and Molly Ely about their 10 years at Goose the Market and Oka, their brand new restaurant inside downtown Indy's Sun King Brewery.
So it's been 10 years, right, since Goose the Market opened at 25th and Delaware. So tell me a little bit about what it was like then. You know, what you were doing then, and, you know, what was going on, and why there?
The neighborhood was just, I think it was like in its third year of redevelopment that year. At the time, it was, you know, still different pockets of it were done.
Right.
But there were definitely, like, newlywed, fairly young couples, a lot of art, and still just a well-mixed neighborhood. But I think that's kind of what we always liked about
it. His sister was living in the neighborhood at the time when she was actually the one who told us about the development at 25th and Delaware.
Right.
So there's this really cool development going in. It has live work spaces so you can live there and have a business. And she knew we were looking for a space to open a business. At the time, Chris was wanting to open a restaurant. So we went and looked at the buildings and kind of fell in love with the space.
Right.
We couldn't do a restaurant in that location because there were some restrictions to the neighborhood, and we kind of built the concept of the market around the neighborhood
and around the
building.
Yeah. Oh, so the location came first?
It did, yeah.
Did customers kind of get it early on? Did they understand, you know, what you were going for? And how did you describe it at the time?
I think the funniest part about our 10-year anniversary party is probably, I mean, if I heard it once, I heard it 30 times that day is, I can't believe you're still here 10 years later.
Yeah.
Like, the first time we came into your shop, we thought, oh my gosh, this place is amazing. We're so excited to have it. It will never last. And we also had people who told us we should sell, like, toilet paper and paper towels to get people in the door.
For the neighborhood.
Like, for the neighborhood.
Become more of a convenience shop.
I would say half of the people got it.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely different at the time.
Talk a little bit about the Sun King collaboration and opening Oka inside of Sun King.
Yeah. So Oka is actually like kind of tying these two things together that we're doing. So Oka is kind of like the Smoking Goose representation, that it's going to be a small footprint, but it's going to be representing like the Smoking Goose products, and then taking some of our retail experiences and combining them into a grab-and-go small retail operation that we can put in essentially any location that has a captive audience. So anywhere that we feel that would have a captive audience, foot traffic for people that are interested in high-quality foods, especially meats. That's kind of how it came about, and it just so happened, you know, like this has kind of been a little bit of an idea, but it's been more developed since Sun King came to us and said, hey, we want to put a vendor in here. Would you guys be interested? And so, you know, at first it was just kind of like, you know, talking, we'll think about it, and they were probably a lot more
ready to do it.
Ready. They'd already, like, yeah. This was, like, back in just January of this year.
So they had this idea. They wanted this idea to happen, right?
Yeah, and they started remodeling their tasting room, other areas of the tasting room, sure. And they knew what they wanted to do. And so finally, we really came around a few months later and really started working on it and developing the idea even more.
So what do you think about it? Do you like the way the way it came out?
Yeah, is you
it?
Like it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do like it. Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's so different, too, I think, than the market. It's so small,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Very small. The market's small, too.
Yeah, but it's even smaller than the market.
We like small, yeah.
Right. Yeah. And that's nice. That's really manageable. I think we learned a lot when we opened Smoking Goose because it is huge. You know,
yeah.
It's a
right.
beast. And we... Well, at least I knew we didn't want to ever do that again, right?
Well, that's the nice thing about Smoking yes. Goose is because we can do a lot from there. I mean, from the item, from what we make there, and we can kind of like, we can be the, you know, and we love selling to restaurants and retailers. We can also, you know, represent our product in different areas.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of, it's a
it's
way
like
for us to firsthand to showcase
product.
Our products that we're making.
Yeah. To do some stuff that's really unique, like some of the stuff that we have on the menu there, that's, you know, the only place you can get it. So,
at Oka, yeah.
Very cool.
So that's kind of exciting. Yeah. So doing some...
We're making sausages specific for Oka,
yeah.
And not selling them anywhere else.
Oh, and I see there'll be demand. Yeah,
yeah I guess, yeah. But actually, honestly, it's kind of a testing ground. I mean, like, mm-hmm. You know...
Oh, that's nice, right?
So stuff that does really well. We have this octopus sausage that everybody loves, or like everybody's been really excited about recently.
Oh, I bet.
And, so that might, you know, like if it continues, that might be something that we add to the lineup, like at Smoking Goose. But so yeah, it's a testing ground, and we kind of do the same. We do the same things at the market too, but this is specifically like sausage. That part is specifically sausage focused.
Now, do you see any more growth down the road over the next 5 or 10 years? I mean, never say never.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just there's a couple of things that I've been working on. We've been working on one is just doing more of these. I mean, this Oka, the Oka is kind of. You know, the idea is that we could put it in other locations
within
easily.
Other
yeah, I mean, it's a fairly small footprint. There's a lot of just breweries, wineries, all types of that are looking for higher quality vendors,
absolutely,
including the airport. You know, so there's a lot of different places that it could fit well in. So that's possible. I mean, that's definitely possible. That's kind of what we didn't want to do with the market, right? So this is something that was kind of like more in line with being able to do that.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I see. So, you know, the market being, you know, so individual and unique and of its space, but
yeah.
This might be replicable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I got something else going too, but I don't want somebody to take it before I finish it. So
continue like doing more distribution, getting more...
Growing that
yeah,
into
yeah.
the business.
Smoking Goose
oh, yeah.
piece
that'll
of
be
it.
Constant. That's a nice
That's
thing
a
about Smoking
growth.
Goose is, like, it's a steady. You know, we're not trying to do anything too fast, grow too fast. So it's a very steady growth that we just kind of want to continue and not do anything. We've had opportunities to do it much quicker, and it just, you know... We like the steady growth that we're doing right now. So,
you can hear Jolene Ketzenberger's Eat, Drink, Indy Saturday mornings at 11 on WFYI HD2, The Point. Welcome back to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble, and coming up, an art show inspired by Star Wars.
But first, once a year, the Central Library in downtown Indianapolis turns into a mecca for holiday shoppers when Yelp Indy brings in nearly 200 local vendors for its annual Totally Bizarre pop-up shopping event. WFYI's Jill Dittmeyer has a sneak preview.
It's 3.5 hours of sampling and shopping all under one roof, Sharon. So I invited two of the vendors and the woman in charge, Brittany Smith, she's the Midwest director of Yelp, to come into the studio to tell me why that one-night shopping spree is so incredibly popular.
So you can find something for the men on your list, which can be a little trickier, or for kids. And all at the same time, you're supporting local businesses and having a drink from local breweries and distilleries, which makes the whole event a lot more fun.
And you've led us into the perfect segue. Two of our guests in studio with us this afternoon, Brad Culver and Nolan Hudson from 1205 Distillery. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
How'd you get the name?
The name comes from the day Prohibition was repealed, December 5th, 1933. Great day. And we have a really old building that was a bank during Prohibition, so it kind of just fit in perfectly with what we were doing.
And you use Indiana grain, corn?
Yeah, we do. We use a lot of corn in every product we make. And we get all of our grain from Lebanon, Indiana, so it's a pretty quick trip from the field to our bottles.
And how do you decide what you are going to sample at the Yelp Holiday Bazaar?
Well, actually, at the bazaar, we'll have all of our products available for sampling. So if you're interested in trying something, it's the right spot to go because you can have anything that we make.
And then once you've sampled some of your wares, you want to go visit Elizabeth Strunk, who is joining us in studio as well. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Hi, thank you.
Have you participated in the bazaar before?
I have not. This will be my first time.
Why did you decide to become a participant?
Well, I have been involved with Yelp. I was an artist at an event in the summer, and I really liked it. It was really fun to meet people in Indiana because a lot of my artwork has to do with Indiana. So it's cool to see the people that I'm selling to.
Right now, how do you sell your art?
I currently use Etsy, and then I also use Instagram, and then just kind of like by word of mouth and people hearing about me that way.
Now, you know, last year they had about 7,000 people at this event.
Yeah, I've heard.
are you producing a lot of art right now?
Yeah, I am. I'm getting ready for it, yeah.
How do you get ready for something like this? Gentlemen, I mean, with a distillery, I mean, you're probably used to making big batches of things or larger quantities, but how do you take that into consideration that you may have probably at least a third of those people are going to want to sample something?
Right. With the distillery, a lot of stuff has to start a few months out because my processes take a while to get all the products ready. That and just calling in favors from family and friends to come help us pour out samples and do sales at the event.
But it's worth it for everyone, Britt. I know you. There's never a loss of vendors, is there?
Yeah, that's one of the tricky things. We always wish we had more space, and there's so many businesses on the wait list that want to be involved, but we always had to balance the safety of the attendees and having enough of space. One of the funny things is a lot of businesses bring extra support staff so that they too can shop because they learn within their first year, there's like, I needed more support. It's so many people at once. It's only 3.5 hours, so they're hitting it really hard and fast.
And you've kind of settled into the Central Library.
Yeah, we love Central Library. One, to raise awareness to what they're doing there. We always set a goal of having at least 200 people get a library card for the first time. It amazes me how many people have never seen this beautiful space in downtown. And it's like for one night, it becomes like a pop-up mall. It's really cool to see all five floors bustling with shoppers and local businesses.
And the three of you potential vendors here, do you notice a difference in people's buying around the holiday time as opposed to other times of the year?
Yeah, definitely. A lot of people like to buy alcohol around this time of year, and they like to buy a lot of it. So this is a great event for people to try. And if a lot of people have problems finding specific gifts for people, and whiskey's pretty universally loved.
Yeah, booze is perfect gift. Can't go wrong.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I've noticed recently, even in, I would say, October, I had people ordering Christmas gifts, which is really nice because then it gives me enough time. I do custom paintings of dogs and houses and things like that, so it's nice to have that heads up that I'm going to be doing custom orders. But Yeah, I have noticed that I have a lot more right now.
There's always a great mix of old and new. What are a couple of, give us one or two old favorites that we need to visit and two other than these two that we need to visit this year as well?
Hopping, first one that comes to mind, a new business is Circle, which is from Bloomington, Indiana, and they're using old wood from barns, reclaimed wood and from fallen trees, and creating lamps and furniture and custom orders. Really beautiful work that they're going to be there as well. And then a classic, I have to give it to Homespun on Mass Ave. They've been with us since the very beginning and are really great at helping spread the word. And they get it. They have so many local businesses under their roof. So I'm definitely shouting out for Homespun.
Yelp's Totally Bazaar is Thursday, December 7th from 6:30 to 10 p.m. It's a free event, but you must register, and you do that online at yelpindy.com/events. We're actually going to be there doing a Facebook Live that night at 5:30. We've done that before. It's fun. We get to kind of go in and see what we'd like to come back and shop for later. You can park in the library parking or anywhere around the downtown library area, but if you're going, you need to get there early because it'll be a sellout. They'll put as many people in there as they possibly can. Worth the trip, though.
What a lot of fun. It's the place to be.
On December the 7th, it certainly is.
Indeed. Well, we have some things to do that actually might help you with your shopping list, especially if you have arts lovers on your list. You might want to score a couple of tickets for one of our events on our arts calendar that we call
What'll We Do?
And you can take somebody as a holiday present. This next thing you don't need to score tickets for, just show up. The Stutz Artists Association's Festive Art Showcase takes place on Friday, December 1st, part of the First Friday celebration at Art Galleries downtown. It's called Stutz Starry Night Artists Holiday Open House, and they make an effort, more than 30 artists who participate, they make an effort to price things to sell that very night. They're thinking of you and your naughty or nice list. So once again, that's at the Stutz Art Space. Stutz Artists Building on Friday night, December 1st, and it's from 5 to 10.
If you want to go there the night before, on November the 30th, a Thursday, you can take a look at the new gallery in the Stutz Building. They've redone it. It's called 10th West. It's contemporary fine art, and it's the work of the Indie Collective. These are a number of very high-profile, well-seasoned artists here in the Indianapolis area. They're going to have that gallery open many days a week, and they're going to be having Thursday openings and features, so you don't have to worry about trying to cram something else in on Friday or Saturday. But this is 10th West. It's in the Stutz Building. Their opening reception, 6 p.m. on Thursday, November the 30th.
Well, maybe you don't want to look at visual art. Maybe you'd like to hear some music on Friday, December 1st. That's a popular date, isn't it? At 7:30, a concert of joyous Christmas music is an annual event happening in Broad Ripple, presented by the Fifth Church of Christ Scientist at the corner of College and East 62nd Street. In addition to carol singing, there'll be music for violin, flute, cello, pipe organ, and piano.
And at the IMAX Theater, starting on November the 24th and then running every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday through December the 10th, they're hosting a polar pajama party at 10:45 in the morning, and they're going to be showing Polar Express, that fabulous movie, on the IMAX 3D screen. And if you think a movie is amazing when you see it at home or in the regular cinema, once you see it on the 3D, it's going to have to take on a whole new holiday flair for you and your family. And then on December the 5th, they're going to host a one-time showing of It's a Wonderful Life on the IMAX Theater as well. Go to their website, imaxindy.com, for tickets and times.
If you have somebody in your world who likes jazz, you can call this a holiday present or not. The Nat King Cole tribute coming up on Friday, December 8th at 8 o'clock at the Palladium.
And also showing right now downtown in the Long Sharp Gallery in the Conrad Hotel is the Athena Shrugged Remix. This is a show that was in their gallery in New York, and it features five local Indiana female artists showing their work in a variety of different mediums. It's right in there off of Illinois and Washington Street. When you're touring around downtown, stop in and take a look.
And if we haven't given you something you like, don't forget you can always learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide, or join us again next week for our calendar we call
What'll We Do?
Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and central Indiana. Your host is Sharon Gamble. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202, or you can email us at aotm@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
You're tuned to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble, and coming up, art inspired by Star Wars. But first, everyone has a story, but coaxing that story out of yourself and onto paper takes some doing. Jeff Rasley tries to help his students do that in an Indiana Writer Center workshop he calls Memoir Writing with a Purpose. He talked to contributor Mark Allen about what makes a good memoir.
So you're teaching memoirs, and I've been reading this book, Barney's Version, by Mordecai Richler, and it's a fictional memoir. And there's a quote in it that I want to read to you. He says, "These meandering memoirs do have a point after all. Over the wasting years, I have levered free of many a tight spot, leaning on a fulcrum of lies, large, small, or medium-sized. Never tell the truth. Caught out, lie like a trooper. The first time I told the truth led to my being charged with murder. The second time cost me my happiness." So I'm guessing that lying is not what you're teaching. So tell me a little bit about what you advise people about memoirs.
I like that. I'm going to steal it.
Okay.
Well, a traditional definition of memoir is a nonfiction book, which is the writer's story. So you're not supposed to lie if you follow the traditional rules. But what a memoir is has really been evolving over the last couple decades, because back in the 80s, it was very much confessional, survivor story of trauma. That was really popular and still is to some extent. But the genre has expanded, and where the lines are drawn now, it's getting close to lies are acceptable. So that's not far off, but we haven't quite reached the point where that you can lie and not admit you're lying.
Right. We'll get there, though.
Yeah.
We seem to be zooming down that path. In this workshop, you're teaching about didactic memoirs, short, true stories, generally used to impart a lesson of some kind, right? So,
yeah.
So I don't want you to dump your entire bag of tricks, but would you share a few ideas about didactic memoirs and what makes them good?
Right. What I want the students that I teach to do is to, first of all, recognize that their diary or their journal is not a publishable memoir. It may be very interesting to them and their family, but outside of that, probably not, unless you're a famous celebrity. Then, of course, you can publish anything. But so what I try to convey is your memoir should have a purpose beyond just, this happened and this happened and this happened. And so that's, I call the class now memoir with a purpose. So that's, what's your lesson? What do you want to give your reader just beyond some experience that you had?
You started your career as a lawyer, and now you're teaching writing, which I imagine is a whole other level of financial stability. But tell me about
or lack thereof.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, how'd you make that transition and why?
Well, I've always written. I grew up in a family of journalists. Grandfather, editor, local paper, mother, city editor, stepfather, editor. So I'm married a writer. My wife published her first novel when she was 21. So I've just been surrounded with it, and I've always written. And I had, as a lawyer, I had a bunch of articles published over the years, mostly about adventure travel, a few law review type articles. But so as law was winding down and I actually had more time, I wrote my first book, which was a memoir.
And what was it about? Travel? Or what did you write about?
Yeah, it was actually a combination of travel adventures in the Nepal Himalayas and creating a foundation over there. So it was what I call a true Three Cups of Tea. If you remember the Three Cups of Tea book, huge international bestseller, mine unfortunately didn't hit that mark. But it was really, it was kind of like that. It was, I had a strange and interesting experience discovering this one village and created a foundation to help develop the village in what we call a culturally sensitive way. But what got me there was an avalanche and some interesting adventures in the Himalayas.
Contributor Mark Allen with Jeff Rasley. Jeff's Memoir Writing with a Purpose workshop takes place Saturday, December 9th from 9:30 to 12:30 at the Indiana Writers Center. For the cost and other information, visit indianawriters.org. Again, indianawriters.org. Fountain Square's Acceleration Art and Photography Gallery has developed a reputation for its quirky themed shows, and its December 1st Friday exhibit is no exception. If you go to 1336 Shelby Street on December 1st, you can see Game of Clones, a Star Wars-themed group art show. I invited resident artist Matthew Sheik in to learn more. You have a really interesting story of how you first labeled yourself an artist. Can mm-hmm. you tell me about that time in... It was in high school, right?
It was in high school. I had always been drawing. I'd been taking art classes very solidly.
Yeah.
If I wasn't in, you know, at least half of my classes by the time I was a senior, if not a good three-quarters of them, were in art classes. I was in an English class. The teacher had asked, can you describe the ocean? I had never seen the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And so she kind of pushed and prodded a little bit. And I just said, you know, I finally stumbled something about blue water in a box because I had seen it on TV. And one of the students spoke up and said, Matt's an artist. If he doesn't see it or experience it, how can you expect him to convey that to you? And it wasn't me labeling myself as an artist.
Yeah.
It was my fellow students.
Yeah. Do you remember how your English teacher responded?
I think there was just still a bit of a roll of the eyes. But,
well, you know, her stock in trade, her medium is words. So
exactly.
I get it.
I finally did something about, you know, I'd seen Lake Michigan and
this poor was man's it. Ocean.
Yes. You know, it's Milwaukee. It's January. So it's gray on top of gray on top of gray.
So at an early age, you were a teenager and already knew that art was something you had to be steeped in. How did that start? Are there artists in your family, or did
yes.
your parents encourage you?
Yes. Going back a few generations, my great-grandmother, I think I'm getting her generation right, was a portrait artist.
Oh, wow.
And had done very well. I think it was the... St. Louis Exhibition in mm-hmm. the early, I can't, was it 1903, 1904?
Okay.
She had won first, second, and fourth.
Oh, my gosh.
And continued all of her life to do so. I believe another great aunt, or not a great aunt, but a great grandmother, was a concert pianist.
Oh, so strong artistic chromosomes coming down to you.
Yes, a few.
Your parents, did they?
No, well, they kind of, on and off. You know, my mom's side is a very practical group of people. You can't make no money off that.
Uh-huh.
And so far, they're right, but it hasn't kept me from it.
And, in fact, you've done a lot of other things. You've worked in radio.
I have.
Where did you do that, and what did you do?
I was here in Indianapolis. The last station I worked for was WFMS.
Okay.
And really enjoyed my long career in broadcasting. I had a chance to be all over the country. I've been in Minneapolis. I've been out in New Mexico. I've been in Missouri and coming back home.
Oh, good for you. You know, I sense that you probably would have still been an artist, even being fully cognizant of you mm-hmm. can't make money in that. How do you have a really strong discipline about how you create? Do you go into your studio every day no matter what, or is there something more organic?
Well, I'm not in the studio every day, but I am drawing every day. I make myself do that. For the broadcasting, you know that you may be working minimum 60, 70 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of ate into that kind of thing. And I would just kind of doodle and things like that. But there was one night when I came home from work and I said to myself, what am I doing? I'm just sitting here watching television.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to live my life. You know, what did you do at the end of your life? I was watching television. So I started drawing again and making myself do that, remembering the disciplines that I had learned when I was in high school. And it took me about 6 months of steadily working to get my skills back up to a place where I had essentially just let them drop.
That doesn't sound like that long, actually. 6 months? I'm
yeah.
sure it was frustrating for you at the time, but to get back up to speed?
Yes.
Wow.
But it was a daily thing. Even if it was just looking at my hand away from the paper and drawing my hand without looking.
Yeah.
Even if it was just, you know, 3 or 4 pages of doing that, it brought it all back.
When you're getting ready for a show like Game of Clones, cute pun, do you look at work you've already created or do you purposely create work that goes somehow with the theme of the show?
It really kind of depends, but for this one in particular, because that's not my usual kind of painting.
Right.
I've had to sit down and think about how I was going to go about making that, making the painting. So I still have a lot of work to do yet before I'm ready to go. But the thing that I keyed in on was now the circle is now complete. It's a line that Darth Vader says in the first movie, and there are circles or spheres throughout throughout the movies.
I see where this is going.
Yes, and in the final one, you have that fight scene between Obi-Wan Kenobi and Darth Vader in the final film, or film 3, because everything's...
Topsy-turvy out of order,
They used a shotgun to put those movies out. You have the scene with Luke and Vader fighting in front of the Emperor, and he's in a circle window.
Right.
So I just keyed in on anything that was circle. So that's where I'm taking it.
So the sense of a porthole into, or mm-hmm. a view into.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that, your work seems very sensuous, organic, lots of curvy lines, lots of rich colors. So that seems like the perfect way for you to access this particular show's
theme. That's exactly where I'm kind of going with it. It's space, technology, and all these things. You got all these lines, and you've got all these circles that are perfectly done. I'm just kind of a little bit sloppy, so I'm probably just going to go and continue with that sloppiness, that more organic feel to things that are so concise.
Where do you start with color? So I assume you sketch with pencil first, and then when you go to paint, how do you start? Where do you start with color? How do you decide what color?
I don't know. I don't know where I pull it from. Maybe sometimes I just feel like maybe I'll hear music and hear that color with it, and I will start there. So it may start out with something that started out musically. I hear the color, and then I build from there.
You can see the Game of Clones Star Wars theme group show at Acceleration Art and Photography Gallery, 1336 Shelby Street. It opens with a reception from 7 to 10 on Friday evening, December 1st, and runs through New Year's Eve. Gallery hours are Wednesday through Saturday from 11 to 6. You can learn more about the show by searching Facebook for Acceleration Art and Photography, and learn more about my guest Matthew at MatthewSheikArt.com. Sheik is spelled S-H-E-E-K, MatthewSheikArt.com. Every week, a Cultural Manifesto's Kyle Long talks five songs with someone from our community. Here's this week's journey.
I'm Kyle Long from Cultural Manifesto, and this week I'll be focusing on the legendary Indianapolis funk band Amnesty. During the early 70s, Amnesty dominated the Indianapolis music scene with their sweet soul harmonies and heavy psychedelic funk grooves. I invited Amnesty's percussionist, Raphael Barnes, to the WFYI studios, and I asked Raphael to describe his contribution to the group's sound.
The part I added to the band was the, like, for the Latin sound, or for the up, more update, like, sound, like, you know, because the percussion thing was something that was actually coming within pretty heavy. I mean, my style of percussion was what really made us what we were about. And,
yeah.
And what I was about, you know, because I was off into the Afro-Cuban, the strictly heavy Afro-Cuban flavor, you know.
If you don't mind, I want to ask you about some of the classic Amnesty songs, and if you have any thoughts or memories you want to share about these tracks, just share whatever comes to mind. The first song I want to ask you about is Everybody Wants to Be Free.
Well, when we've done that, we just wanted people to be free with the music, free to move, free to dance, free to think.
And Three Cheers for My Baby, that was your big single.
That was the big singer. That was, most of that was done at the beginning of my career. And back then, well, see, I don't sing. So, you know, it was a recording, but I mean, it wasn't that fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Because it was, I don't sing.
Right, it was a ballad.
Not,
and
yeah.
You didn't have a chance to do your thing.
I mean, I liked it for the group, but I mean, for me enjoying the vocal part of it and what it was like, I mean, it wasn't that fascinating to me.
And on the flip side of Three Cheers is a great funk song, Lord Help Me, with great lyrics.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that one.
Look out, cause time is running out by those who don't pay attention. There's a big thing going on in the world. I'd like to take time to mention.
I mean, you don't remember it step by step everything you're doing. When you listen back to the music and you say, man, I didn't realize I was killing all that, you know.
You were.
So you don't remember all of that.
Sure. Yeah. And one of the heavy, heavy funk songs from the Amnesty catalog, Mr. President.
That's it.
Yeah. What about that track?
That's it.
That's the big one?
That's the bomb right there.
Yeah.
That's the bomb.
Another heavy funk one that you'll probably like that I'm going to mention is Love Fades.
Yeah. That was one of Calvin. Calvin Williams was one of the ones that was actually really, really put that song together.
Okay.
Yeah, that was his favorite.
And I understand if you don't want to comment on this, but a huge member of the band, Red Massey, passed away recently. Is there anything you want to say about this musician and the many years you played with Red Massey?
Red Massey was like my son. Matter of fact, he was the youngest guy in the group. And he always knew that. And I used to call him my little son. So, yes, I'm going to miss Red. And he was he took Amherst to where nobody else took him. So, I mean, I give him praise for that.
Yeah, amazing bass player and musician, right?
There you go.
And as we wrap up here, Mr. Barnes, any final thoughts you want to share on the legacy of Amnesty's music? Like I said, this music has stood the test of time, and it's just as powerful, I think, today as it was probably when you recorded it.
Well, you know, we put something out there, I don't think, but it's always going to be out there for a while. It's going to be out there for a long time. And I would like to do it all over again. If I had another group, I'd do it all over again.
Well, that's great to hear. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Barnes. I really appreciate you taking time to speak with me today. And thank you so much for your contributions to the culture here in Indianapolis. It's a huge contribution.
Thank you very much. It's a blessing to have it here, to be able to sit here and talk about what we talked about today. It's a big blessing. It's something I will remember for a long time.
Hear Kyle's A Cultural Manifesto on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio Wednesday nights at 8 or Saturday nights at 10. Thanks so much for listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble, and today's contributors included Mark Allen, Jill Dittmeyer, and Ben Shine. Hear The Art of the Matter Saturday mornings at 7 or join us Thursday nights at 8. And remember, you can always listen to and share our podcast at WFYI.org. Next week, the Indianapolis Children's Choir and the Indiana Historical Society are ready for the holidays, and we learn about a moving partnership between Ivy Tech art students and Community North Hospital. And of course, we'll have that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do?
All of that and so much more on The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in central Indiana and Indianapolis. The Art of the Matter is executive producer Roxana Caldwell, contributor Jill Dittmeyer, and host Sharon Gamble. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.